Welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show, presented by Hugh Hattrick. Drive fast and try not to crash.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my very special guest, none other than Andrew Marr.
Hello.
How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm very well, thank you very much. It's been not a bad week, and there's been plenty of news, plenty of mad things going on in the world to keep us all occupied.
So, how are you finding self-isolation?
Pretty much the same as it was before, because I'm in school, and so I didn't go. I went to Tesco's today. I did go to Tesco's today. I didn't get a chance to tell this before we talked. I needed some bread. I needed a couple of, a loaf of bread. And because I'm not one of the utter idiots, and if there's anyone out there thinking that it's a good idea to stock up on 10,000 toilet papers, I think you need to go away and slap yourself around the face, because you know, I'm being much more restrained than I could be about what I think about people that do that. Well, okay, right, let's get real. I go to Home Bargains, which is an excellent store for certain things. I'm the kind of guy that was shopping.
Good for old DVDs. Good for against. They used to have motorsport DVDs as well. They used to have motorsport DVDs, but not anymore. I once saw they had a whole bunch of like the F1 reviews that they must have got, and they were a bargain actually.
Okay. I think I got a Jim Clark DVD for like a pound or something. I got a fantastic bargain the other day where there was a reconditioned Shelley Girl. I love Felicity Jones. It's one of her early films. Oh, come on. It's a fantastic
film. You've got taste worse than mine. I thought none's on the
wrong. I know that our taste does not line up, Hugh Hattrick. I know that. But I am a difficult person to please. I have... There's two levels, isn't there? There's like... Sometimes you see something that's awful, but there's something about it that keeps you going and it just is entertaining. And there's certain films out there that are just brilliant.
I saw a terrible film last night called Polar. If anyone's seen it, it had some quite big names in it. Polar, it's a kind of thriller comedy kind of thing, but it was pretty awful. And I really should have just kind of turned it off halfway through, but I continued to the end. All 2 hours of it.
You're a miserable old Scottish git.
It was that bad. And it could have been reasonable, but it just got a bit ridiculous. But we are on to motorsport tonight for all our viewers and listeners. Welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show. If you're watching on Facebook, welcome to the show. If you can follow us on YouTube, that would be super, because we'll see your comments. We don't actually see your comments on Facebook. Unfortunately, it affects the stream if we try and view it. I'm making lots of echoes, so we don't want any of that. But if you're watching on Facebook, slap on another screen with YouTube and you can comment there if you like. That would be fantastic. Now, I've got my website up and running. That's right. HughHattrick.com is up and running. In fact, I better put that on. And it's not completely as I would like it yet, but it's almost there. So you can go there and get all the latest videos as well from our YouTube channel. And it's going to have more information. I'll be working on that as I self-isolate, but as everyone else does. Getting it up to date and getting it all sorted out. And soon we're going to have some stickers as well, which I'll say, drive fast and try not to crash. I think I've got a friend of mine who does editing. So hopefully we'll come up with some good designs and we might get a little bit of merchandising going. I think it's a good phrase to have. Now, did you see our commentary?
Drive fast and try not to interact with anybody or stay six.
And that's a good one, isn't it? Drive fast and don't interact. That's a good one.
I get all the wordy bits. Too many words. I always too many words. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. And good morning. Sorry, good evening, Ant. We see that you're commenting away, which is fantastic.
UFO with Jean-Claude Van Damme is god-awful film. Yes, it is. Well, it's Jean-Claude Van Damme, and let's face it, every film has been awful. So,
if we take motorsport on a movie theme, that knew that the Ford versus Ferrari, it's supposed to be very good. I'm yet to see that.
I've seen clips and I've heard reviews and this kind of stuff. But you see, I have a problem. And this is where my caveat is I am very hard to please, okay? Mm-hmm. So Rush, everyone said, was this fantastic film, and I had two main problems with it. It wasn't the acting, it wasn't the story, it was the idea that Niki Lauda's only skill in life was setting up a car. Because if that was true, then he was an engineer and not a driver. Three times world champion, a man who was given last rights in the... Last rights, and 6 weeks later was driving the car again, is just an engineer. What a load of ollocks.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that wasn't the worst thing in the film. And I've seen clips of Ford versus Ferrari, and they have the same problem. And the problem is, I watch motorsport.
Mm.
So, and I've seen really fast cars. Mm. And what they do is they have 1,000 cuts where the camera goes cut, 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 to try and make it look like they're going fast when you know they're only doing 30 miles an hour.
Yeah, you can tell what gear they're in. They're in a much lower gear.
Yeah, first.
We can tell you know they've got a camera car in front to try and film it. Yeah. But what's...
Carry on.
Now in Formula 1, it goes along with it. Now in Formula 1, they have these new cameras. You know, they have them at Bahrain and Abu Dhabi when they come to the hairpin. And it's an electronic camera, you know, it moves on a hoist. And it goes right the way around.
The hoist ones, yeah.
And they're brilliant because you actually get really close to the car as they go around the hairpin. And it kind of comes the other way. So you see them go past you. And it's quite a good way of getting...
That's like when Top Gear used to do these things and they'd get the camera and they'd go... And then they go, they look great. And I'm going, I don't know. I just felt sick and threw up in the corner. Because all you've done is made me go... When we look at something, Hugh, we're going to have an argument now, everybody. Ready? Not like a big one. When you look at something, it goes, and you go, because we're keeping still.
Aye.
I don't understand the idea that a camera moving like a twat is going to show you what you need to see. It's not. You keep still. It goes fast. Yes? Woman, child,
political mind. That is one of our co-hosts. He's obviously not checked his email.
Jonathan Sutherland, what are you not doing on this thing of disagreeing with me in person? How dare you? You're far more intelligent than I am, and you know many things about stuff and things.
But yes, the last time I went to Jerez, I've watched it. It was the last time that I saw Michael Schumacher, and he was in the Mercedes. And we went right up to the first corner.
You have posted the video, and I have seen it.
But this wasn't actually on the video. This was I managed to get on the inside of the track. Oh no, was it the inside? Yes, it was. There was a walkway for the public, and it went to near the first corner. It was like a kind of tunnel, and it was fantastic because you saw them go slightly uphill before the right hand bend of the first corner in Jerez. And then they go herring round. And so you really got to see them slow right down and you actually get to see their helmets. You know, you actually get to see some of them, the actual person, as they drive round the corner. It's quite a sharp corner. And
which
then they
is
head off.
Apparently something that's missing from modern Formula One. That there was a series, which I wish I could remember the name of, 10, 15 years ago. They tried to resurrect the idea of the old... If you can imagine the old 50s cars where...
Yeah.
I mean, safety... the telling thing about those old Maserati 250Fs and the BRMs and this kind of stuff like that, the telling thing about them is if they wore a seatbelt, it killed them. Because
that's crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
If they crashed, they were thrown out of the car, clear of the fire and the death.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard for us to understand this kind of stuff. But the thing is, you could see everything they did. You could the whole upper body was exposed dangerously. I mean, I wouldn't want it to go back to that in terms of...
I remember seeing Senna drive at Donington. And that year, the McLaren in 93 was very low down. You know, it was at a very low cut around the top space. And you could see every time, because they were coming out of the Donington loop, which is kind of a chicane, and every time we changed gear, because at that point the semi-automatics were quite a new thing, and you could see the head and the neck move as it went along. Yeah. You know, and that had traction control. Yeah, but that was something because McLaren made it a little bit after Ferrari and Williams. So their one was a bit more reliable. I remember the Williams one kept blowing up. The Ferrari one was even less reliable and had all sorts of things there. That didn't blow. The engine would blow.
Early days, you know, you take the leap and you hope for the best, don't you? Name a bit of technology that's walked in and just worked.
Yeah, I know that's the thing, isn't it? But I've got a surprise for you, Mr. Marr, because remember on Sunday... Don't worry, it's not the police.
That debacle.
Yes, when we did our commentary. And remember I said I was going to try and do a lap of Bahrain on my F1 2019 and see kind of time I got.
Yes,
because we saw them all do it. Lots of celebrities, lots of good racing drivers. And I said, I'm going to try and get a particular time. Can you remember what that time was?
No.
It was less.
Too busy moaning about the two idiots that were talking codswallop and wondering what the hell was going on because I didn't know. I need information. I need lap times. I need to know who it is I'm looking
for. You should have had a grid. Yeah, they'll have to work on that. Well, I was trying to get a 1 minute 29. That was my goal, to try and get in the 1 minute 29s.
It was 1 minute 29s, actually, Hugh. I've suddenly remembered.
Anthony Davidson did a 1:29.3. And I thought, well, that's, you know, he was a good driver. And we talked quite a lot about him. Yeah. Guess what time I got?
1:35.4.
No, even on my first lap, I was quicker than that.
Oh, okay. Let me give another guess. Was it 1:20?
No. Somebody's got a 1:08, which is ridiculous. They must have cut half the track.
Film where he hacked the sim and decided he was going to win a net and apple. That's what he did, isn't it?
I got a 1:29.3. No.
2.
A wee bit. No, sadly, I wasn't as quick as that. Oh. 8. 29.8.
So you were five.
Half a second.
Bloody hell, that's pretty good.
Not too bad, eh? And that was with about half an hour's worth.
It's not bad. See, I watched your footage of you driving that AMG Mercedes around with that little fella and apolitical mind sat in the back. I'm fine.
He wasn't sick.
No, he wasn't.
Which is something.
Look, he wouldn't be. Why would he be sick? He was looking out the window, looking where he was going. While you were... I've got to say, okay, and I'll get back to you doing the one track. That was a very good time. Excellent, Hugh Hattrick. And I, you know, I am quite impressed. Don't tell anybody.
And it's the trophy now.
Why do
people
do that?
As far as my ego, you know. I do have a bottle of champagne because it's my birthday tomorrow.
So
I have a bottle of martini champagne in the back. And I thought, should I pop it? Should I pop it on the video just for everyone at home and soak my entire office so it'll smell like an old alcoholic sound? You know?
So there's two comments I'd like to point out here. I was in a car seat by Jonathan.
Oh, yeah.
Not with the amount of hair you've got, pal. Were you in a car seat? Not unless you've done the veto. And Ant Salamino saying, was it in minutes or light years? That's a bit cruel.
That's all right. My ego needs to take a blow. But it was the
point I was going to make, if I can remember quick before I finish my sentence, was... No, it's gone. Sorry.
Yes, so I did a 1:29.8, and it said theoretically I could do a 1:29.6 if I could just get a little bit more.
And so it worked out that if you took the right lines in the corners you'd messed up, you would get
1:29.6.
Still,
it's not too bad.
Yeah, but the question I ask is that 0.1 of a second that Ant Davidson did, where was that from then? If the computer thinks, because one of the things I used to like about the old, I don't know, BBC, you know, when Brundle was involved and all this kind of stuff, and they used to give you. They used to put together everyone's best sectors, didn't they? And give you a theoretical best time on that day.
Uh-huh.
That's presumably what the computer's done.
Yeah. It takes all your best sector times and it puts them together.
Where's that 0.1 of a second? Where is it?
There's a lot more. I think there's a lot more on the curbs. I don't know what kind of setup they had because I had pretty much the basic setup. I just simply increased my brake pressure to 100%. So the braking is a bit more, because it's really hard to brake and get the speed off. And if you brake too late, you're always missing apexes.
That was one of the things that was very interesting about what, and I apologize for not knowing his name, the name of your instructor was?
James Fletcher.
James Fletcher was telling you, and I'd heard this before, he was telling you the opposite of what we're taught in a normal road car. We talk about progressive braking. We're taught that when you go very fast, you start light, so you don't lock the wheels up, and then as you get slower and there's less force on the wheels because you're going slower, you add pressure, yes?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what he was telling you is slam the anchors on, full pressure, and then lift off. And he did actually say it's the opposite. It is the opposite of what we're taught for normal driving. And in terms of physics, the normal driving thing makes sense because the force you need to apply gets more as you have more grip because there's less speed there. Yeah. But it's very interesting what he says about when you got downforce.
That's right, because then you want to have the car
stop. You did 150 miles an hour. You've got a hell of a lot more grip in a Formula One car.
Yeah. You have... I always wanted to say that to my driving examiner. Could you imagine? When he says, why did you brake so hard on the street?
Michael
Schumacher. Well, I knew I had to keep the... I had grip because the rear spoiler generates so much grip that I could brake hard and get round the corner. You know?
Right. Mr. Hattrick, can you just read what Mr. Apolitical Mind has said?
He says, Hattrick is quick, misspent youth and adulthood. Yes, absolutely. Although, and I am quite competitive.
No.
Especially when Jonathan's involved.
Sherlock. Really?
Because when I did the competition a couple of years ago at Company Car in Action, Jonathan talked to the guy who was doing the times, and Jonathan had been a wee bit away from me, maybe about a second or so behind me. And he managed to get the chart because they had a big, like a Top Gear times, the kind of chart. And he put his name, they put Jonathan's name at the top, and then he sent a picture, and I was driving a car at the time, so I had to get back, park the car. And as soon as I got this picture, I stormed across straight to the simulator and said, that can't be true. And that was it. And I found out I was absolutely right. He hadn't done that time at all.
At Toyota, was it?
Yes, they were very good. Actually, it's Ben Smith, I think his name is, who, or maybe I've got the surname wrong, but he runs a massive simulator company down in Silverstone, at the industrial estate at Silverstone Grand Prix track. And he was very, very good, actually. And they take these simulators to big do's and things like that. And it was very, very good, actually. Really, it was a fantastic day. It's well worth it. So it sees, when you get your steering wheel on your pedals and your PlayStation or your PC or your Xbox.
Well, it's on my list. So it is on my list. There's got a few things I've got to sort out first. But I'd like it. I'd like to.
We get enough of us, you see, we can have a lobby. We can have a lobby and we can race together. And then we can bring in our viewers. Our viewers can play with us as well.
I've been watching a bit of Twitch because Lando Norris, really disappointed that he couldn't get involved a bit more because he plays it all the time. Hmm. He was phoning up Jos Verstappen and asking him advice on how to win the race. It sounds like they're going to be doing a lot more of these races. They need to fill something in, but they need to.
They've got to have all of them. It's I don't think this thing works when they have the gamers, possibly because they're quite good, but I think some of these other celebrities.
I don't know
if that works.
Found this out earlier tonight, thanks to Ant, who gave me some information. The guy whose name I can't remember, he was Chinese sounding. Oh my god, that's so sad. But the guy that won that race is actually a reserve driver for Renault.
Was it Zhen Zhu or something? I think it was Zhen Zhu. I think it was. He is very good.
But what I'm saying is he's an actual race driver. He's not just a guy that sits on a computer. Yeah. He is a good driver.
He is good
with a real car. You know, I would like to say that as I'm not the kind of person that would poo-poo the skills involved in. And the reactions and stuff are similar. You made the point to me that a lot of sim races go into real racing, and
the good ones, eh?
Somebody was saying, I think one of the morons was saying that, oh, you know, it's the same. We don't even need real racing anymore. What's the difference? Yeah. What I would like to do is put one of those idiots in a car doing 200 miles an hour approaching
a hairpin.
Let's say Eau Rouge. Well, at the top of the hill, you've got a cliff. Now, last year, we lost the life of someone doing that. And then say, see if you can do it now, pal. Keep your foot in. While there's an actual granite cliff in front of you, and you've got to not hit it and die. And then you tell me it's the same.
It's quite a corner and quite a steep bit as well. I mean, you don't really see it. And the games have gotten better, to be fair. But until you see it for real, it is quite a steep section. And that's how it's so amazing that they go so fast going around it. But going on a thing that happened a while ago, and I think that actually it was great fun to watch. There was a program that David Coulthard was one of the team captains for. And it was called So You Want to Be a Racing Driver, or words to that extent. And they would have a team.
Ruby-Dukes was the co-host with them. Remember her?
Who was that? Sorry?
Denise Van Ulten.
Oh, Denise Van Ulten. She's still there.
What I'm thinking of, it had Eddie Swerving Irvine as the other team captain.
That's right. And David Coulthard. Yeah.
The host was Denise Van Ulten, who I've got a lot of time for. For all that she's come across as an ethics bimbo, she's actually quite a clever woman.
I know, she was quite good. Yeah, I know, she was good for it. But didn't she not have Miss Dynamite or something? Miss Dynamite on it. Or maybe that was a different thing, but because Miss Dynamite had a huge crash at Silverstone.
Who were frightening.
They had that woman who was on everything. She was a member of one of these pop bands. Was it Mia or somebody?
Someone's Welsh. A pop band that's on anything just kind of doesn't.
It's that woman, she's been married about six times. She was like a piano player as well. She's got some quite a lot of skill.
She was on Club 7.
I don't know if it was S Club 7. It was like Pop Stars or something. It was like that one they did with.
She was on, she's a very good pianist, and she presents on Classic FM.
Ah, right. Yes, I think we're on to the same lines.
Miley in class.
Miley in class. Well, she had a colossal shunt because they had to race at Silverstone, right? And then they had to race in Cardiff at the new arena at Cardiff at the Bay when they were doing work to the Bay. They had this go-kart track where Christian Klein got beaten by some local amateur in the race. But poor old Miley in class came hearing along the road, didn't break or had some issue. And smacked into the water bottles that they had at the side of the track, you know, to try and absorb the impact. And she was knocked out. It was a massive shunt.
Yes,
and it was quite a thing. But the thing was, the only thing they said afterwards, after the break, they said, sadly, I mean, we all knew she's obviously going to either go to hospital or go, you know, she wouldn't be in. But the commentator basically said, sadly, Mylene won't be joining us to take any further part in the programme. And the way he said it was totally deadpan, and I've never been in a room where more folk burst out laughing when we saw all of that, because it was quite a shunt. I mean, they took about half an hour break because they had to rearrange the whole track. And she was fine; she made a full recovery. But I think after that they realised that having celebrities racing with real racing drivers is a bit dangerous, because you know clearly they've got to be pretty good.
Because they have that what's that stupid skiing thing they do that has 10 broken bones every second. They do that. Motor racing is so much safer than that nonsense, because if you have the right car, then you're okay.
Your aunt has given a very appropriate comment. Perhaps you would like to read out that one, Andrew.
No. You know, I refuse, because aunt is being crude. We are a classy thing.
I just appreciate the commentary. I like people actually commenting.
I would not say my class is a very attractive young lady, and she's lovely. Read the chat. What chat? Right, okay. If we're going to do this, let's go through this. All right, this is So apparently you're very competitive. Now, I got that impression. The thing is, I impressed me when you are watching your video with all the proper in-car sound. Two things impressed me. Two things struck me. The first thing that struck me was the hideous noise that it makes when you're doing a slide. Yeah, all this stuff.
Oh, it's horrible. It's going.
And you're thinking, oh my God, I wouldn't want to do that anyway because that sounds horrible. So, and I didn't realize you were in a 4MATIC, which, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. I liked the guy, James, whatever it was
James
called.
Fletcher.
That's him. Mm-hmm. Well done. 10 points. James Fletcher was explaining to you this thing about that you need to throw the car out and keep the power down.
Yeah, that was really hard to kind of, your mind says no. That's the thing.
One of the times you were waiting for the wet circle, you could see the guy that you had to wait a bit longer for one guy going ahead of you, and they span every single time they did it.
Yeah.
Thought, oh, here we go. Because I've spun in a car. I've had rear wheel drive live axle cars that are easy to spin, and it's you know, catching it and getting that that point.
Yeah, that's the trick. That's
beyond what most people understand, because you've got to get your throttle right, you've got to get the steering right, everything's got to be just right to keep it there. This drifting thing, people think it's easy. No, you either go and you spin the fishtailing, or you don't.
Yeah,
holding it on the throttle is a very, very difficult thing to do. I was really impressed that you got the 10, 20, 30 yards you got.
Yeah, towards the end, I was getting it a little bit better.
But the first time you did it, was very telling. You could hardly slide, and then you slid, and then you lifted off straight away.
If it had been a rear drive car, I think it would have had a better chance of actually.
Possibly. You know? But the point I'm trying to make here is that you approach, and if anyone's listening or watching or whatever they're doing in terms of driving, what you did is that your automatic reaction was to save the slide. On the road, one of the reasons I hate Clarkson, because he's a twat, is that he thinks sliding around on the road's a good thing. I've had friends that love fishtailing their cars. The only crash I've ever had in my life, I'm 50 years old, and I've been driving for years, and I love driving. The only crash I've ever had was because the back end went on a car. And people, I have seen so many people that go, and it's like watching a monkey or a chimp drive. There's on or off of the throttle. There's no subtlety involved. You had that subtlety. You kind of like you took it off. And then when the guy told you, right, you need to let go of that fear response. Your fear response was immediately to save it. It was brilliant. I really liked that. I was thought it's really, really good.
Actually, we used to do a lot of power sliding at me and Jonathan on his old farm. That was the thing. And we used to take I remember one year it was horrendous snow.
I still respect we chance to practice as a kid, wasn't it?
But it was in an Isuzu Trooper Citation. Quite a big car, a big 5-door. And they had an old airfield near them, and we used to go down there, and it was this wonderful flat bit of snow, and we were trying to do power slides around this long corner, and that's where I remember it. We deliberately put it in two-wheel drive.
Farms and your snow and it's just not fair.
But it was great fun. But that's where you learned it. And with a car like that, it was quite soft. It was quite nice, you know. It gave a kind of progressive slide. It was quite. And once you got into it, you could feel the grip. You know, you could feel the car going, and it was quite easy to kind of hold it.
Well, this Isuzu Trooper wasn't exactly known for its handling, was it? can I just point out, Jonathan? What are you talking?
I know it's because he's not on the show. He's being very.
On your plastic computer and. Come on! Who all this? What's he saying?
He thinks he can say things he can't say on the show.
Shagger. What the hell? It's a family show. Is it? If it is, I'm not doing it anymore.
I would have worked,
should be banned immediately.
If I was monetized, I would be worried, but I'm not monetized, and I don't think we've got much chance of it. So I think we're okay at the moment.
Right, I'm going to disagree with something. His golf arm. He had a golf arm.
He had a golf arm. He only had it 6 months. But I see his teeth in his golf.
The R32 was amazing. But the difference is, okay, John, the difference is that the Haldex diff, it's front-wheel drive with a Haldex diff that distributes the power to the back. The Mercedes is rear-wheel drive that distributes a bit of power to the front. Now, I have a massive issue with all of these cars with a Haldex diff. They've all got a massive problem. The thing about the Haldex diff is it kind of does that with the power. Now, one of the most fantastic car rate videos I've ever seen was Martin Brundle's 10 best.
Oh, the supercars, is it?
Supercars, yeah. And he drove the Diablo and the Murcielago on the road and in the track. He went to Alton Park. On the road, the Murcielago was fantastic. It was much easier to drive and it was a great car, this kind of stuff. But the Diablo was better on the track because it had rear wheel drive. And the thing is, it had this changing grip at the front, okay, and that's what I don't like. My favorite four-wheel drive system, bizarrely, and I've owned one, was the old Ford four-wheel drive system, you know, that had on the Cosworth and the X,
like in a Sapphire and things like that.
I had an ex-police 2.9 liter V6 injection 4x4 souped up quite nicely. And it was split 53, if I remember correctly, 53-47. So it was rear biased, but it was fixed. Now, it's great having computers take over the world and drive for you. But I can do it myself, thank you very much. I don't need someone to tell me how to do it. So I love four-wheel drive. I love on-road four-wheel drive. But I want it fixed. I want to know what it's going to do every time I go into a corner. Yeah? I guarantee you would have been able to slide that kind of four-wheel drive if a computer wasn't taking over from you and saying, I'll put a bit of power to the front to stop you sliding.
No. I think there's certain cars that are definitely easier. And because the front wheels are always going with that grip, it's dragging the car on that Mercedes that when I drove it. So it's always doing too much for you, and you need to do it a bit yourself, I think, to make it a bit easier.
If you knew what it was, you could compensate and you could alter the way you do it. But it's the way the computer, if it'll start at nothing and then suddenly give you 40% at the front. If it was always 47% at the front, you'd be able to, you'd know what you're doing. Does that make any sense? And I'm babbling a bit, but it's kind of the idea that if it's fixed front to back, you know what the car's going to behave like front to back.
Yeah,
it would have done a brilliant job. Honestly, you're not been paying me. You should. So there. What is?
He was telling that the trooper was awesome. The butler taught him how to drive. I don't know if he means me or somebody else, but I never had a butler. Unless I'm trying to think who he's referring to. But
what was boring was me talking, or was it?
I think the Golf R.
Have you noticed he's got a hat on today and I haven't?
Well, I thought I would just, it was.
No, but normally me and John have hats and you.
Okay. As long as if it's too sunny and your air conditioning doesn't work and it's the summertime.
Amazing today. Right. Are we going to do any F1 news?
Well, I've got major news, to be fair, for all our listeners and viewers. It was the news is that the Goodwood Festival of Speed has been postponed. So it's no longer going to be on the weekend of the 7th of July. It's going to be postponed till either late summer or early autumn. But it is at least still going ahead, which is good. But I suddenly thought, oh, my goodness, they wouldn't surely call that. Because, I mean, there's so much money involved in that. You kind of think they can't do that, but that was the thing. So that's the major news, and of course, Azerbaijan is cancelled.
It's not cancelled at the moment. It's just been postponed. What I read about the guy that's it's very interesting, actually, because with all the debacle that went on with Melbourne, there was a lot of money lost. And the guy that's, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's the chief executive of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, was saying that he really felt for Melbourne, because there's a similarity there between them and Azerbaijan, because they're both street circuits. So they have to build the circuit ready for the race. Now, with Melbourne, they'd built the circuit, got everything ready, and then suddenly last minute, boom, you're not doing it. Yeah? So it lost them a lot more money than it should have done, really. What the guy in Azerbaijan said is that he's getting in there quick. Before they've even started anything, they're going to postpone it. But that means that they don't lose the money. But it doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And as Ant pointed out earlier in one of his comments, is that they're aiming for 15 to 18 races. They're going to carry on the season beyond November, when they would normally
try
and do 18 races, 15 to 18 races. I mean, great. If they do, fantastic. It'd be wonderful.
It's going to be a lot of races, like literally one after the other.
Oh, yes. And they've stopped the mid-season furlough that they have. The 4 weeks is happening in, was it April, something like that? So that they don't have to have it. I mean, so the guys and girls get 4 weeks off, which they deserve, because they work. I know they get paid a good wage, but they work hard for it. They
really imagine a championship decider like on Boxing Day or something, or Christmas Eve in some amazing circuit like Abu Dhabi at Christmas. That would be an incredible thing to do if they kind of changed it over.
I would love it. I don't think anyone would do it, but I would love it.
Imagine that Christmas Eve in Abu Dhabi for the final championship race. That would be fantastic.
Because I'm so poor and I can't go. I would
look. I mean, everyone's bored with the Christmas build-up. But years and years ago, you knew it was a new Christmas movie. When you're growing up, there was some film would be released. But now, nowadays, you would have a championship decided.
Seriously, what's wrong with you? Right, Apolitical Mind, Mr. John, is saying it's cancelled. I have not read that. Could you elaborate, please?
That Azerbaijan was cancelled. But they're saying that it will hopefully start either in Canada or maybe even further than that. Does the schedule change because it's a leap year? Good question. But we've never had a year like it in Formula One like this. I mean, so many of us are kind of thinking, what's going to happen? Are we ever going to get a race? I remember when it used to finish in October, early October. And then you think, 6 months or 4 or 5 months till the start of the next season. I mean, that was a long time. Now it finishes in December, and it started again in February for the testing. So it's really hardly any time at all.
It started with 6 races a year. You did 9, but you picked 6 to get the points.
When
I started watching Formula 1, it was 16 races a year, and then it became 19, and then it became 20.
And I think 22, it was the record, wasn't it? What
they're aiming for. They were aiming at one point for 22 cars on the grid.
It's only
that much, obviously.
No.
But I don't know. How do you think it's going to go with this virtual Grand Prix are going to be doing? As much as I enjoyed that last race, it was a lot of fun. I think it was very badly executed, because what they basically did is just told everybody about something dodgy that was going on anyway. And they got the same morons involved, and then they drafted in Jack.
Why don't they? I'm just trying to think. They could get them on like Formula 3 cars, right? Fly them over to wherever it might be. For example, Abu Dhabi in 25. I mean, all these planes are pretty empty just now, aren't they? They're not doing anything.
The whole thing. I mean,
But if they flew one driver in a single jet, and they just had 25 jets, then you could do a real race.
The science background that I'm from, and I listen to some really good podcasts, some medical podcasts. I'd recommend Dr. Peter Attica that I was going on about the other day. Well, into Formula One. Well, there's been 5 podcasts over the past couple of weeks where he's talking to the top experts in America on oh god,
and the coronavirus,
this kind of stuff, not just coronavirus, but yeah, broader than that. Mm-hmm. And the issues with coronavirus, is there anybody out there wondering whether there's a lot of this stuff about, oh, we're tough, we can put up with this kind of stuff, and we need to get immune from it by having it and all that kind of stuff. That's all very good. You know, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be tough and we shouldn't be able to, deal with these problems.
Yeah.
The issue isn't, and there's never been, whether or not you or I will die. The issue is whether we're going to overwhelm the health systems with the people that are in trouble.
That's
the problem. So it's a really virulent virus. It's not the worst, but people keep talking about it being like flu, but it's something like 10 times more virulent, more transmittable than flu. Okay. So it's called the SARS-2. So it's like SARS, but it's a new one. SARS-1 was much more deadly. It killed people like that. The thing is, though, is that if you've got a problem and it's a really bad problem, you pay attention to it straight away, don't you? It's like, oh my God, this is really obvious. And that was SARS-1. So as soon as someone was ill, they needed to go into intensive care or something, or they needed to be dealt with. And so it was dealt with quickly. This new SARS-2, it's got that nasty sort of in-betweeny thing where it's more deadly than just flu. And it's more virulent and transmittable than flu, but not so bad that people pay attention to it too much. So what's happening is it's kind of like quietly going around everywhere.
Some people get it.
It's more of a psychological problem than anything else, if that makes any sense to you. That people are going, well, you know, it's not going to kill many people, so they don't bother about it. So it ends up killing a load of people.
I did see a very funny picture that people have put up, saying, you know, because Prince Charles had got the coronavirus. And there was a great, very funny picture that people put up saying, Prince Charles is staying at home at Windsor Palace or whatever, you know, Buckingham Palace, because he's got COVID-19, while Andrew is staying somewhere else, is at his house with Jennifer, who's 14.
You know? Oh, no.
Oh, it's horrendous.
Am I allowed to say something about this? Because
of course you can.
Well, just I've listened. It's not just because he's my namesake, Andrew, but people talk about Harry as it's amazing because he was in the Falklands and all this kind of stuff, right? And it was great. Don't get me wrong. I remember as a teenager watching Prince Andrew's helicopter flying 10 foot above a burning deck of the Sir Tristan, Sir Galahad, rescuing people. And I have friends that were there. I have friends that were pulling burnt victims, pulling the skin off of their bones as they were pulling them out of the sea. In sea, you know, in that bay. You know, he was flying 1,000 feet above things as a target for enemy missiles. And I think it's so sad.
The way it's all got.
I honestly think it's so sad that he's basically ended up being a bit of a playboy and this kind of stuff. But name another member of the royal family that's put themselves in jeopardy like that. It's a very difficult situation to deal with. I don't know how to deal with it.
I think once you get around those kind of people, that the Hollywood lot, that's when things go wrong, because it's all happening, isn't it? But that's the thing. But on a motorsport front, there's going back to your problem on esports again. I think they're going to have to do quite a lot to try and make the coverage a bit better of the esports. I think it's a good idea, but they need to have all the Formula One drivers taking part to give it a serious audience. And I think they need to be able to analyze stuff a lot better and have the kind of the information up there.
They need the information. They were treating it like a bit of a joke, weren't they?
See, what they should have is not, if Sky are going to cover it, because I mean they're the ones who are obviously got the license for Formula One. They should have had a show with them. I mean Brundle, David Croft, and they should have had a simulator available, and then they should have had a go. You know, so Brundle could have had a shot and telling us, you know, how to take the lines and all of this to kind of build it up a bit more. And then see, it's not that easy by getting somebody like David Croft to go and have a go and see how he got on. You know, so it would have been a bit more fun because I don't think he would have done anywhere near as well. And then, you know, it was a bit of build up. But I think the commentators just were not, they were just not.
They looked at it with Jack because, as he said on the show, and it obviously that none of the other people had done any research on him whatsoever, and they didn't know. He said that one of the things he started on was esports. He's used to that kind of commentary and this kind of stuff. But the rest of them was just useless. It's like they were just, look at me, I'm on telly.
It was a bit like Diversity TV. It was like, let's just put these guys on and put them on sport.
They used to less audience than we get.
That's saying
at least
something.
We take it vaguely seriously. Motorsport, you know what I'm saying?
No, it was quite bad, but hopefully it will get better. And I think, I don't know why you were about 3 or 4 seconds behind me and watching it, but I think I logged on to the stream quite early on.
What did you log on to though?
Just to YouTube. I just went on to YouTube and then it had a reminder to say it was starting. Okay. The stream was starting. So
I was on my PlayStation 3.
Yeah, that's what I did. I did a 4. But we'll definitely be doing more of them. So for all our listeners and viewers, we will be trying to do more commentary on that. And from listening to our show, I'm going to make sure I turn off all the sound because it was picking up the sound from the commentary, which wasn't so good. So I'll make sure that is done for the next one.
Take a little earphone or something. I think in future I'll be using Twitch because Twitch just looks...
It's a bit better.
Yeah, a lot better.
I haven't used that. Hopefully my computer can cope with that.
Twitch is easy. If you imagine a YouTube or a Netflix for gaming...
Uh-huh.
That's what it is.
For gamers kind of thing.
So yeah, I mean, you just start a channel, and if you start gaming, you can connect your box.
And it does it.
And you can have people following you, and it's kind of crazy because I've been one of those guys sitting there watching people doing Gran Turismo or Call of Duty.
Yeah, well, I was hoping eventually to get an Elgato.
That's great.
I was hoping to eventually get an Elgato streamer. Or the streaming machines, and now that my PC is a little bit slightly faster than a pensioner, I should be able to hopefully run it, because the last time it wouldn't run any of these things. Well, I tried to do Discord and it just wouldn't work. It was just I've gotten over with it. So I'm going to try and do Twitch might be the thing. Maybe we should have our own Twitch channel and maybe a BitChute channel as well, potentially.
You know, that would be a really good idea, because I've logged on to Twitch, and you can do that kind of stuff. That would be really good.
Yeah, that would be, and might get more views.
To do it well, we've got our usual fantastic you and me, and Jonathan, if he turns up, hello. Hello.
How can you not turn up when you're in your own house? All you need to do is turn on the computer.
The thing is, Jonathan's commentary, I mean, Ant's always good. Bizarre. But Jonathan's commentary is never as funny without me batting off him. Okay, we need the hat. He is to me the Crazy Dave Coulthard of the Car Sim and Race Driver Show. He's got the hat and he sits there and he comes out with intelligent comments, and I can pretend to be Welsh and say stupid things like that idiot on Channel 4, and then you can be, I don't know, what would you be, Susie Wolf?
but it's good fun, and I have to say we had a great time. Like 2 weeks ago when we were on our Mercedes day, right? We flew down, basically we got an amazing deal to go first class on the way down and to drive V8s to then come back using the same facilities and all of that, and so thanks to Jonathan for sorting all that out, it's quite a thing. And I have to say, we've got a shout out to Andrew Dixon, because hopefully he will coming back on the show. He's the only one who doesn't have a smartphone. He's one of these. I thought he's got like a prepper.
I have
a bunker somewhere.
Huge respect for anyone that's capable and able and willing to not join in with this nonsense.
Yeah. So until he gets a smartphone,
that guy, I'm just too, you know, I didn't have a choice.
Because he's getting married this year, you see, so he wants to probably keep healthy.
Does he want to do that for?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, he's engaged. It's going to be later on this year.
I
so
do as well. I mean, I've done this. I don't want to do it again. Did I say that in public?
Oh. Yeah. Oh, that's the thing. Well, we've been going for 50 minutes of the Car, Sim and Race Driver show. Yeah, we've not been turned off. No one's come and raided the house yet, so that's quite something. We've not offended too many people tonight. But we will call it a night. But stay on the line, Andrew, because I'll have a quick word with you afterwards. But
never a quick word when we're talking. Come on.
You can go to our website, which is hughhattrick.com.
Can I just ask a question?
Of course.
Mr. Apolitical Mind has said, Twitch thoughts.
Thoughts.
Ha, 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 ha. What does that even mean? Speak the English.
And Hillary Clinton has tested negative for POTUS for President of the United States.
Thank God.
That almost gives me
time. I was having a curry. What the... People, don't ever say that we don't read out these comments, because not only am I reading it out, but I'm confused by it.
Well, I'll show you the picture. If we're on
of a curry,
no.
Oh, is this the one you put up the other day? What the hell?
That's
the two most hated people in Britain. You know what you need? Who's the guy from China that they all did demonstrations? Put him on the side.
I got that for the Brexit night.
No political beliefs whatsoever. Oh, Greta.
She's been very quiet about all
Thank
this.
God, she's annoying. You want to slap her and stick her in a garden. God, come on.
It's a thing.
I see him flipping.
But this is, see, I think it's going to be quite interesting.
And then she comes along and going, it's too late, we're all going to die. Let me drive my V10 and leave me alone.
Yeah. But the funny thing, though, is that the you know, we do have the green. We were talking to James Rupert a few weeks ago on that podcast, which was really interesting. All the Greens think this is great, being stuck at home, not being able to go anywhere or do anything. But it's brought everything to a halt. I mean, apart from the idea we have no economy, the economy is completely ground to a halt. There was walking up Berwick High Street today, and everything was closed. It was like being, you know, on Boxing Day or at New Year or something, and it was, you know, nobody's about. And it's how are we supposed to live like that? But that's ultimately what they want, you know. And well, it's crazy.
It was hilarious going to Tesco's today. It's like, imagine you get a bunch of people at Tesco and say, right, you know, like you used to like Lego when you were a kid, do that with shopping trolleys, and they'd turn the car park into this massive.
Oh yeah, because they stop you from going in
and
there.
Out was, and it's like, right, but no one was telling. This is the thing I have a problem with. No one tells you anything. You walk up and you're like walking the normal way, because I'm got a car, so I have to walk, and I walk in and I'm like,
I'll get you a Renault Twizy. Have you seen the Renault Twizy?
You know what? I was looking at for £995. I was looking at Google what? I was looking at one of these smart cars, you know, for twos.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'll have one, because it's more cars than I've got right now.
Oh, they're quite good. I mean, they nip around town.
Then exactly. For me, there's single person. There's three vehicles that make sense: a good bike, a little tiny for two, or now what's that thing that the Velociraptor? It's an 800 horsepower Ford F-150 pickup truck that Clarkson took when he was going up that mountain to rescue the.
That special one. Yeah, that was.
There's the Raptor, which is only 600 horsepower, and there's the Velociraptor, which is what I would have, which is 800 horsepower. So either kill everyone with your emissions or don't. Yeah. Now, I've never understood the whole concept of people not liking motorbikes. I'm a single person now, thank God. And the only vehicle available in the world that deals with a single person has two wheels, and it's called a bike. So what do? They make it so impossibly expensive and so impossible to learn to ride a bike. Now, me and my idiot brother who lives in Newcastle agree on one thing in life, and that is that everybody should learn to ride a bike before they get in a car. Now, you might not like that, but the point is that you never know, you never learn about road conditions, safety, observation, all the things that I was complimenting you earlier about your driving. You learn on a bike. Because in a car, or as us bikers like to call it, Ant knows this, the coffin, you feel safe, so you take risks. If you're on a bike, you don't feel safe, and so you learn how to avoid accidents.
It might be more predictive and kind of prepare.
But the point is that bikes should be being encouraged. Vietnam had thousands and thousands of bikes. There was no congestion. They were trying to get people into cars where there would be congestion. That makes no sense.
I like things like the Renault Twizy. We had great fun driving it last year. Car in action. It's a great, but the electric batteries is not fast enough, and it only does about 40 miles. It's really poor. I thought if they put a bike engine in that, you know, a little small petrol engine, that would actually be a really good car, and then put some doors on it. That's the other thing. They couldn't design a door.
Gordon Murray, one of the greatest car designers of all time. You know, if anyone knows Formula One, they know Gordon Murray, okay? Because Gordon Murray was with Brabham, and then he was with Williams, the Grand Effects Williams, all this kind of stuff. And it's the guy that designed the McLaren F1. So no one can tell me that he doesn't know how to design a car that does the job. And he is obsessive about weight, and he's obsessive about everything. I mean, he's one of these guys. He's like, I love the guy. He's a hero to me.
Yeah.
What's the vehicle he designed after the McLaren F1?
It was just some small city car or something.
Yes. If you imagine the 3-seater version of a F2, but more stable, more economical, and with more room in it, because the guy's a clever guy, and he's also designed with his company that he's set up to design interesting things. A new way of making the space frame and all this kind of stuff that's really cheap, you know? A truck for Africa that can be flat packed and sent over.
That's right.
I mean, this is a guy that refuses to sit in a box. It's like, what do we need and what can we do to fix it, you know? Now, he's got a little 3-cylinder petrol version of it, and he's also got an electric version of it. The whole idea is it does the job of transporting us around. I'd have one. Oh, my God.
Yeah. If they put a petrol engine in that, something like that, or a Twizy, it'd be a great car to commute in. Absolutely brilliant car to commute in. Because it's so narrow, and it's got two seats, and if you have only one person, you've got a bit of boot space. Not a lot, but, you know, a bit of boot space. And it would handle a lot better because the batteries make it quite heavy. So if it was petrol, it would probably be a bit lighter. So it might actually kind of be a bit more responsive. I think you'd probably get quite good MPG out of it. Mm. If it was a small engine, you'd probably get 50, 60 MPG. Well, you know, which is going to be much better. You might get 100 miles on a tank.
You're getting a 50 MPG from these little 1-litre turbocharged.
Petrol cars, it's going to be a lot lighter than that.
So if you've got something that's lighter than that and cleverer than that, God, of course you are. It's just going to be fantastic.
Yeah, but they just don't want us travelling across town. They don't want us actually doing anything and going anywhere, and that's what gets me. But on another note, because actually we may as well just carry on because it's going rather well. It's been interesting. I've been watching a lot of programmes about like barn finders and where they go and find these old classic cars that have been sitting there. And one of the ones I saw that was quite good, and you should see it if you're on YouTube and to our viewers and listeners as well. I think it's Explore with the Firefighters or some kind of you see that with the bearded explorer. One of these. It's on YouTube. And it's one of these ones. There's some amazing ones when it's in Britain, where he goes and finds this. It's in this old forest, and it's obviously been a scrapyard many years ago or some kind of collector's place. The guy's passed away, and there's like incredible cars that are actually in. A lot of them are in surprisingly good condition. There was like a Mercedes 600 SL, which is quite a rare car from like the 80s. Or maybe late 70s, early 80s.
The old V12.
I was never sure about classic cars, to be fair. but I love the Jaguar XJ120. And I love this mark. I thought that would be such a nice classic car to have. And they had all sorts of Ford Escort RS2000s. That was that one was they had two of them. One was a tree had kind of grown out of it, so the whole car had crumbled.
I love that car.
Yeah, well, I mean, imagine getting one of those, you know.
2 liter, and I'm not a fan of four cylinder engines. I've got to tell you, I'm just not a fan of the sound. I'm not a fan of they're a workhorse.
Unless it's an Alpha. The Alpha 2 liters are quite good.
This is the point I'm making. In a way, there are I don't know how they do it, and I don't know enough engineering to know what they do, and I don't even think it's like someone, you know, you were saying about someone that was tuning the Alpha engines and stuff.
Well, yeah, they use an organ pipe.
Yeah, the organ
on Alphas. Yeah,
but the old Ari Vartanen and Nutters from the 70s with their Mark 1 and Mark 2 Escorts, they just sounded amazing. Yeah,
they were good, weren't they? Well, there was on this one, there were Peugeot 205 GTIs, like the 1.6 version, and again, remarkably good condition.
115 horsepower
and it was so 10 grams,
you know, that's pretty good.
It was sick with something. Mark 1 Capris. So it was incredible. Good night to, I believe, a political mind is heading.
Yes, I'm just going to say good night, Jim.
But it was, you know, so some fantastic cars. But the you know, when the scrappage scheme was going about 10 years ago, all these cars that were traded in, and they were, I don't know how some of them got through, because they were supposed to have a valid MOT and be registered and taxed and so on. But they had somebody put them in airports. You know, old runways, and they just stacked them up, and there was like hundreds of incredible cars, Mark 1 Golf GTIs, the Rabbit convertibles, you know, all the kind of classics from the 80s and the 70s, all lined up. They were all Jaguars. There was a Rolls Royce, and classics from like the 50s and the 60s sitting there, there was a lot of junk as well. But these cars, you think, oh, you'd give an arm and a leg to just about to have one of those cars, you know? Yeah. Why would you trade them in? To get $2,000 for it, you know, and I mean, but clearly they'd be worth a huge amount more money. Even at that time, they would have been worth quite a bit.
The whole classic car market is an amazing thing, because I think cars peaked in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, the
engine technology has obviously gone on.
Yeah.
It's to do but with
the fun of the cars in that day.
Do you know what the funniest car I ever drove was? You are going to laugh. Okay, now, to put it in context, I've had a 2 litre E-Reg Cavalier with a powerful car. The fastest I've ever driven in a car was in that. I've had 4 Saab 9000s, which were superb. Oh, my God.
That was, again, a classic. Classic.
Special. Seriously special. None of them were turbocharged. They were a 2 litre and then 3 2.3s in a row. But they were special. I mean, to get the idea of what I'm going to say about the funnest car I've driven, they were so special. And yet they weren't the funnest car I've ever driven.
Saabs were always quite heavy to drive, weren't they?
Heavy and they're safe, but in terms of handling, they were perfect.
You find them quite good? Yeah.
Front wheel drive. I didn't have enough power to get torque steer. I had 155 horsepower, 2.3. So, but for the day. There wasn't that many people that could overtake me in the A470 back in the day. But the funniest car, in the same way that the funniest bike, okay, funniest car was a 1 litre Fiat Uno.
Oh, yeah, they were great. They used to handle so well.
They handled brilliantly. They had skinny tyres. You weren't going fast, but my God, you were having so much fun while you were doing it.
Yeah. Well, I remember I was 17 and I had the L plates on, and we had one as a courtesy car. Fiat Uno was one. It was being like a 1991 or 92 car. They were roughly thereabouts. It was a courtesy car from the garage, and my mum would let me drive it. I don't even think I was probably covered at the time, but because I don't know if they insured people who were under 21 to be driving those kind of cars, even a basic 1 litre Uno, whatever it was, Uno Action or something, whatever they would have called it. But I remember driving from Dunster to Berwick, and I basically didn't have to slow down at all. I said, well, the speed limit is 60 miles an hour. As long as you weren't in a town, you were able to keep it 60 on the national limit. And my mum was like, slow down for the corners. And it was like this thing, every corner, no problem.
The reason you did so well in that thing down in Gaydon is in Brooklands is because you had done that in those little cars. Okay.
Yeah,
I read an article by Quentin Wilson years ago when he was still writing for Top Gear.
Yeah, Top Gear. Yeah.
And he was talking about how he was sat in a car waiting for his missus to come out of the shop, blah, blah, blah. And he saw someone in an Astra with lower suspension and big wide wheels trying to do handbrake turns, practicing the car park and how he couldn't do it because he had no understanding of grip and low suspension. You know, like they don't. They think low suspension, big wide wheels. And he started this whole article about how they used to drive cars through mid Wales, you know, which I know they were based in Birmingham and they drove cars through mid Wales. And once they were in these supercars that could do 200 mile an hour odd, and they were being overtaken by a guy in a Pop Fiesta who knew the roads. And the point was is that the Pop Fiesta was A, built for little roads like that, whereas big wide Lamborghinis, you know, 7 foot wide, you're not going to get down the road like that very well, are you? But the point he made was is that we all, you, me, people of that age, grew up in cars that were a bit knackered, that weren't very powerful. And because they weren't very powerful, to make any progress, we had to keep the speed up in the corners. So what did we do? With no grip, we learned how to take the car around a corner.
Yeah.
If you've got too much grip, you never learn how to use the best of the grip you've got. Does that make sense? It's always too much.
You know, you learn that skill of being on the edge of it. Yeah.
You're never on the edge of grip. You never learn what it feels like. You never learn what understeer and oversteer is. You never learn how to take a line on a corner. So you got a 1 litre Uno or a Pop Fiesta or a 1 litre Metro, God forbid. It's going to go that far.
I had one of those. Well, I drove one of those when they were out. And I remember them. The old ones.
Yeah. A-plus engine, you know.
Aye.
They had 40 horsepower. If you slowed down, it'd take you 10 minutes to get a bit of speed again. You have to keep your speed up. But isn't that the perfect training ground to learn how to drive well?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's hot. Yeah,
and it was fun cars. It was great. And then you could jump into something else. Oh, the aunt saying had a mate at a Ford Mexico, and he raced it once, and it fell in half. Goodness me. It was cut and shut. That was the thing. I remember a friend of mine had a Cortina that was a cut and shut job, and they were quite happy about it. They were quite happy to drive it. It was so dodgy. I mean, that was really dangerous having one of those, but isn't it? That was quite the thing. But I think there is this emphasis now on like cars from the 80s or the late 70s, 80s and 90s, because there were some great GTI, some great hot hatches. Like, there was one guy recently found a barn find. They found two quite actually recently, both deregistration Ford Sierra Cosworths, but they were the three-door Cosworths. Mm. And they found them in a barn. With a big whale tail.
I'm
so in love with that. I actually thought, you know what, this is bringing me back to why I love cars, because that is what makes you a car enthusiast. You want to have a go on one of those, and they were ludicrously expensive at the time, and now they're worth a fair bit of money, but the guy paid next to nothing for it.
I wouldn't buy a modern car, honestly. If I had the money right now, which I don't, but if I had the money right now, I would be looking for a car from the 90s.
It's funny. It's a really hard one, isn't it? I mean, I love the Giulia Quadrifoglio, the Stelvio Quadrifoglio. I would have one of those all day long.
I'd have one, but I'd be driving Galaxy.
Yeah. Or that Mercedes 600 SL thing, like SEL convertible, whatever it was. It was a kind of coupe, actually. I'll need to find. I want to see the video again.
In your video?
Yeah. Well, the one that I saw on the barn finds. It was under the trees. Yeah. That's what I want. I thought that's a kind of relaxed millionaire's car, and I've thought I'd like to be a millionaire. But it was cream on the outside, kind of cream of white, and I could just imagine the tan leather inside or something like that, you know. And it would just be, you know, you're driving down the south of France, And that would be the thing, wouldn't it? It was, you know, that's the kind of car that you would have.
This is another thing people don't understand, because I get so frustrated with people. There's not so much anymore because I don't know anybody apart from you. What's the best car, Andrew? Because, you know, I've been nuts on cars for years. And they go, oh, what's the best car? What's the best car? What's the best car in the world? What's the best? My son, Alex, bless him, he used to ask, what's the best car in the world, Dad? And the problem I have is that I'm really bad at lying. And so I would go, to do what? I'm a scientist for a reason. It's not just... to do what? What do you want to do? The best car I had for carrying people and just all around everything was a Ford Galaxy. The best car for having just pure fun was that Fiat Uno. The best all-round car I've ever owned was a toss-up between, and I don't know if you're going to laugh, we'll see, it was a Saab 9000, which was astonishing, just a superb car, and a Vauxhall Omega Estate. I tell you what, that Vauxhall Omega Estate was a superb family
car. I wanted to rent a car from Enterprise. And it was the 3-litre V6 petrol, and that was an Amiga Estate.
Oh, they were quick.
And it was great fun. I'll never forget it because I was actually doing church work.
210 horsepower, I think they had.
And it was automatic and the whole thing.
Right. Everyone talks about the Monaro, right? Same chassis. Same.
Was it Holden?
Yeah. Same chassis. You know, they have the... Right, okay. The family history is Vauxhall, Senator Carlton, the various versions of that, because they were the executives, the senator and the everyday car. I think it's called Carlton, the everyday car, but whatever. Yeah. The everyday version of the senators, the same chassis, just a different body.
Yeah, as a Holden, wasn't it?
Oh, the Lotus Carlton, which I've been in the Lotus Carlton. Yeah, that's the fastest I've been in a car, equal for about 140 miles an hour somewhere. Totally legal, honest governor. I admit nothing. I wasn't driving, so I can't be done anyway. But the point is, this was so fast. And the Lotus stuff they did to the engine was, oh my God. When it came out, it was the third highest torque rating of any car in the world. And the two cars that had a higher torque rating were the Lamborghini Diablo and the Ferrari F40. Well, that's not a bad pedigree. So... but then that same chassis evolved into the Omega, okay?
That's right.
It was not like any other crappy Vauxhall that was out there. It wasn't this front-wheel drive rubbish thing. It was a proper quality rear-wheel drive car. And I had an estate. And, oh, my God, the handling and the comfort. Yeah. And the space, and it was also how the same company could make the Astra and the Nova.
They were even worse. Nova Saloon. Remember the Nova Saloon? The diesel. One went by a diesel Nova Saloon. That was a car with little credibility. I'm sure they did an advert for the Nova Saloon. And it had like this young guy driving around, you know, and looking at all the women. And I mean, they honestly, in real life, they would have laughed at him if he drove past in a Nova Saloon saying, there's no chance he's going to get a date.
They all did a saloon version of something, the Belmont. What the hell was that?
Yeah, that was bad.
The thing is about the Jetta. The Jetta was a really good car. It's a superb car.
The Jetta was good, but the Belmont, the Astros,
everyone just went, oh, go for the boot. Yeah, but the thing about the Jetta is that it was a really good car, and it was actually quicker than and you could get a 16-valve version.
To be fair, I was looking at cars the other day, and one of the cheapest new cars on the market today is the Fiat Tipo Saloon, 9995.
Okay.
And it's brand, it's pre-reg.
Replacement.
Yeah. I love the Tempra. We used to have them for cars of cars all the time.
Again, was a Tipo with a boot, but the Tempra, really nice car.
Yeah, it actually drove better than the hatch.
Exactly.
It was more aerodynamic. It was actually really good on fuel.
Nice version of the Ford Escort, but it was kind of like, an Escort with a boot.
It's
weird how that works.
They were. I remember if somebody had an Orion gear, they had quite a lot of cred because it was kind of like the gear with the wheels, and anyway, it had the luxurious... trim, you know, the kind of velour trim and all of that. They were quite fun.
Orion gear.
Now there'd be that car. To be fair, if you had an Orion gear, That might actually be worth a bit. You know, it's quite an interesting car to have, actually, I would have thought now. Because some of them used to have the telephone box wheels, didn't they? They used to have those special wheels. I'm sure they made a few models with the gear, but the Gear X or something. And they had, I've seen Orions, I remember them, that had the you know, like the XR3, I see, like the Pepper wheels, like the XR3s used to have.
Pepperpot wheels.
Oh, yeah. Pepperpot wheels, yeah.
Yeah, that's what the father-in-law had.
Yeah. I know, I've seen, I mean, they were quite expensive at the time, you know, I've seen it's quite a high-end car.
Like an executive escort. Could you have such a thing as an executive escort?
The
thing about all of those cars is that they did the job, you know.
You kind of wanted one, you know, they were actually quite desirable,
and you could understand what was going on as well. Now everything's so complex, it's like
and boring. Like, if you want a Mondeo. One liter petrol, 5-door turbo. You know, they've got a 1 liter turbo petrol and a Mondeo, and it's like, as long as I can be very much fun to drive.
I mean, so, no, seriously, Hugh.
I mean, it is a good engine.
But I would have that engine in something because that little 3-cylinder turbo engine is a monster. Yeah. It's an absolute monster.
Right. Well, Ant's been saying, you know, they had a Capri Laser stopped outside his house. And he thought they had gone extinct. Yeah, I've seen one or two of them, to be fair. And they are really nice, actually. And the Tesla truck, well, Jonathan's put an order for anyone. He bought £100 down on the Tesla website.
Really?
And ordered one. Yeah. But it's going to be a few years yet before you can do it. That incredible. It's like a tank, like a kind of modern age tank kind of thing.
Yeah, I've seen it. I think it's hideous. I was watching, I don't know if I said it on air the other day or whether I just said it to you privately, but the Tesla, Harris Garage did a thing on the Tesla, and I was really impressed.
I've sat in one recently.
Might not be the answer to everything. It might not be the be all and end all of everything, but it was really for modern electric cars. If anyone's going to get anything, I'd get a Tesla. Seriously, I mean, it's not just that it's the most efficient version of an electric car today, because it seems to be, but in real world driving, I mean, I've seen a lot of different, I mean, you see Top Gear and you see famous sort of TV shows, but Harris Garage tends to do a much better job of showing you the real.
Yeah, he goes right into the details. Yeah.
He goes for a drive and he tells you what's going on. Whereas all these are trying to sound good, you know, Clarkson or Top Gear or whatever, they're all talking. But Harris Garage, I've got no shame in recommending that.
You know, there's lots of good channels out there that are worth it.
Yeah, there are stuff out there, but it's rubbish as well, obviously. But so I watched that, and he's done a series where he's got plug-in hybrids and he's got EV cars and all this kind of stuff. The infrastructure behind the Tesla, these supercharging stations, that alone makes it worth getting.
Yeah, you were saying last week how much more infrastructure they've got than the other cars.
They just put them in there. Yeah, and he was sat there and he was gobsmacked how fast it's charging his car. Now, that's if you and I, so let's say we had to drive an electric car, what's going to be the thing that's going to be the most worrying thing for us, you and me, normal everyday people, whether we like cars or not? We're trying to get somewhere and get back. That's all we're worried about. We're worried about at the moment.
Nice if you can hear them. Nice if you can hear.
Yeah, that's all nice. That's all. Interesting.
You can't hear an electric car, you just hear the wind as it kind of comes along and thump before you.
But in terms of just having something to drive, I've spent the past few years without any vehicle at all, and I can tell you I am missing having
it.
So when the world, if suddenly can't have cars that we're used to, and when we're denied listening to any kind of car, whether it's a B12, I'm not saying it's good or bad or ugly or whatever. I'm just saying, if that's the state that we have to deal with, the thing that will worry us the most is if I have to drive somewhere, I want to know I can drive there and get back. Next day, do the same.
That's what we will charge up easily. But that's the thing. So what have we learned then on tonight's show? We still think older cars are probably better than the new ones. They're certainly more interesting by a long way. I mean, there are some ones that stand out, of course, that are new. But I think we all have this heart. It's been seeing these old barn finds. There's some incredible stuff. There was one that was found in Italy, I think it was. In this, they were all the old Alfa Romeos from the 60s and the late 50s, early 60s, like the coupes. And they were found in this old, it was like a monastery or something, or an old barn in some old place in Italy, and they were actually in pretty reasonable nick. Well, I think 4 out of 6 were okay, and they're all going to be restored. They were only discovered a few weeks ago, so they're going to restore the whole lot. But they looked absolutely stunning.
Do you know what they are? Any?
I think they were like, was it an Alpha 6 or something, or it was a, I'll need to go back and look at it on the 60? On the, was it a Mark or some kind of Mark 6 coupe in a convertible or a Frog Eye? A Frog Eye or some kind of, they're all Alfa Romeos. I'll go back and I'll watch the video, because it was absolutely amazing. It was just photographs of what they were like.
Really was.
Well, they looked incredible. In fact, they looked better covered in dust than they did in some of the pictures that the guy had put of what they would look like if they were done up. And I thought, actually, they're better just to leave them and just get them running, you know. But no, I think there's some of it. There must be more and more cars out there as well that people are going to find. Because that's what they said, that they're, you know, when people used to buy their council house their council house, and they would have an allotment, or they'd have a garage round the corner or something. And now they're saying, you know, they've knocked, a lot of times these garages are being knocked down, or they're being developed or whatever. So they sell the garages. And then when people, they made the mistake of knocking them down.
Find this thing.
Now they go in and they try and find. Chasing Classic Cars is a good
one. Exactly, yes. Exactly. I love that show. And they've not done it for years, have they? They're all repeats now, but it's such a shame because anybody that's out there that's the epitome of a proper car enthusiast and not a moron, it's that guy. A little fellow with a moustache, with his dad who used to work in Ford for the Model A B line or whatever it was called.
That's what makes it interesting. So now whenever I go past anywhere that's got a line of garages, and I'm thinking, I wonder what's in there. You're going to think, I wonder, there'll be something in there. Now, even if it's like one of the guys from the one who used to do Fifth Gear, Johnny somebody, he does Car Pervert or something.
Car Perfection. Perfection, it's called.
Is it that? Is it one? But he's done something like that, or might be slightly different. He's quite a younger guy, but he's quite good actually on the whole thing, to be fair. And he found an Allegro, and the thing was, it was a special Allegro that had been made. I think it was either a 3 or a 5 door or something, and he found out about it. And so they opened the barn doors, and it looked great from the barn door side, but what they forgot was that on the other side of the garage, when they walked through, the garage had been left open, it had been knocked through. And so the front of the car had been subject to the elements. And of course, it was completely ruined. So the whole front of the car was rusted through, and there was virtually, it was just a bumper. And then, of course, you know, the Austins used to rust away like nothing else. But the back of the car looked as good as new. But it was an Allegro SS or something like that. So it was some sports version or something, or some luxury. Yeah. But he was so kind of disappointed because the back of the car looked great, but the front obviously needed a lot of work. I think even the engine may have been out of it. But I know it was quite funny. I mean, obviously, there are better cars to find than an Allegro stuck in a barn. But,
in an Allegro, 1500... it was SLE Super Deluxe Estate 5 gear. Not to end up on the wrong side of the road, but it wasn't that bad, you know.
Yeah, if they worked, if they ran, if they brought down quite a lot.
It's, of course, it was never meant to look like that. They chopped, was it 6-8 inches out in the middle? Because the tooling they had at Longbridge didn't fit the original car, so instead of changing the tooling, they just chopped the middle out of the car. I mean, tell me, Hugh, why did we lose the market we had?
Yeah,
I can't imagine. It's weird, isn't it?
I mean, even at the time, the Italians were making the Alfa Sud, and we made the Allegro, you know.
Oh, my God. And then as a competition, we had the Marina.
Yeah.
With the same company.
Yeah.
We do the same thing. Just nuts. I mean, okay, yeah. You've got TR6. TR6, what a fantastic car. What an amazing car. That 2.5-litre straight six. Powerful, man. Beautiful sound. Gorgeous car. Everything about that car is amazing.
So the Mark III Cortinas was good too.
Which I was told today was the inspiration for the Lancia Stratos. The designer of the TR7 was headhunted by Lancia to design the Stratos.
Yeah.
I can't believe that BL didn't screw that design up. You know, the guy who designed it, and then it's like, whatever. But you got, and then mixed into all of that, you've got the Triumph Dolomite Sprint, the world's first production 16-valve motor.
Yeah.
The O series engine had like 90 horsepower. The 16 valve engine, the Sprint engine, had 130 and did 5 mpg more.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it?
What did BL do? Oh, no, I don't want that. Put the crap engine in the TR7.
Yeah.
So they sold the 16-valve engine to Saab, and we all know how good that engine is.
For the rally cars and stuff, isn't it?
The rally cars were two-stroke. They were different. They were two-stroke engines, they were. No, this is the 1970s. The engine that ended up being the 16-valve with the turbocharging and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Saab was respected across the world for quality and power and speed. And where's the Dolomite Sprint engine?
Yeah, that's quite funny, isn't it? It is something. Now, Dan's saying that he knows where there are two bubble cars and three bikes buried underground. Oh, we should do a video.
Oh, in Chasing Classic Cars. Yes.
Yeah. Well, he's saying that Ant knows where there are two bubble cars and three bikes buried underground. So maybe he has.
No, I've just read that properly now.
Yeah. But the keys and all Granadas fitted each other. Yeah, that was true.
I know that about Ford. We used to, I was in a group of a self support group for disabled people back in my hometown. Many years ago, and we had a minibus, and the minibus we used to call White Bess. It was a Mark II, I think it was a Mark II Transit, and you could open all the doors with 2p.
Was that the one with the big kind of eyes for the grill for the front, or was that the Mark I Transit?
It was like bubbly shaped, you know, it was slightly bigger than the original one, and a bit rounded.
Yeah, that'd be quite a nice car, actually. It was quite a nice van, they were quite,
it was great. At the time, wasn't it? We had a Mark One, which we called Old Bess.
That's it.
Grey, and that died. And then we got another one, which was called White Bess, because it was white. I don't know. I just kind of felt like I lost touch with them after that. But Old Bess and White Bess, I remember fond memories. But yeah, you could pretty much do everything with a tuppence or a penny or whatever. You didn't actually need the keys. But that was the thing. That's why Ford invented that weird and wonderful key, isn't it? That barrel key, you know, the one that was...
Yes, aye.
Normal key. It was a funny-looking thing, wasn't it?
Well, my only claim to fame in having bad... I've had plenty of bad cars, but for a little while, I helped someone get a car, and they gave me their old trade-in, which was a Vauxhall Nova. And I'm the only person to have had a Vauxhall Nova for more than 3 months and not have it nicked. So that was the thing.
I had a Vauxhall Nova 1.2 swing for about 2 years. I hated it.
Did you ever? Was it in that? No one ever tried and nick off with it because they were always getting nicked. Everywhere they were getting nicked. Well, this was in early 2000s, and I sold it to a friend of mine, and it was nicked literally about 2 days after he had it. Someone had a crowbar and just wedged the door open, and that was it.
The Duns there, like borders.
No, that was in Edinburgh.
Oh, that's so right.
But I was going to say, but no, that's.
To be fair, car crime isn't huge.
No.
Changing a bit now, but you know, if you can imagine, when we used to go up to up the A9 corridor on holiday, which is frankly my favourite place in the world. I used to look at it as a sort of like where I live, but more.
Yeah. So,
you know, whatever we found in Northwest Wales of nothing, of tourists, we got to Pitlochry and we ended up finding more nothing and more tourists. So if you can imagine the kind of a crime level in Snowden, yes. That's the idea. But yeah, so it's not really representative because most surveys don't take into account little places like this, do they?
No. Well, my insurance halved when I left Glasgow. So that was it was the thing. So that was it. I could have two cars for the price of one in Glasgow and that. And yeah, we never had any bother in Glasgow. That was the funny thing. We never had any issues at all. But really? Yeah. So no, that was the thing. But on that note, I think we should probably end the show.
Hour and a half.
Fantastic. Thank you to all our viewers and listeners of the show, especially to Ants as well, who has been there right from the word go. It's been fantastic to have you all with us. And remember, you can visit as well. We've got our Facebook page, the Car Sim and Race Driver Show. We've got our YouTube channel at Hugh Hattrick. And also we've got the website, hughhattrick.com as well, where we'll have more and more offers going on that.
New,
and lots of
new
fun.
Improved website.
It's new and improved. It's fun. It's a lot of fun, actually. I've got a few things that I'll need to change on it, only because it's probably liable. So I'll have to make sure that I can fix it. But you've been watching the Car Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my special guest, Andrew Marr. So it's time to drive fast and try not to crash. And we'll see you next week.
What was the new one? What was the new one? The one I came up with and you thought was good.
Drive fast and don't interact.
Yes, that.
That's the one, yes. And excellent. Stay on the line, Andrew. But to all our viewers, we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.